Let's make today the day you get one step closer to becoming the parent you've always wanted to be and the parent your children deserve. Hi, and welcome to Powerful Parenting for Today's Kids. I am your host, Erin Taylor, and I have wanted to help parents and children literally since I was 11 years old. I created this podcast to help you make a stronger, healthier, deeper connection to your child, to understand the inevitable challenges a little better, and learn some new ways to navigate them when they occur. Thank you for spending some time with me. Now let's get this show started. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today is episode 616, and I'm really excited to have my new friend Trent McIntyre here, and he is the creator of the Fire Up Your Brain program, and Trent has a really cool, really amazing story, and I'm really excited to share it with you here today. So welcome, Trent.
Thanks, Darren. Thanks for having me.
It's really going to be a fun conversation, I think, that we're going to have today. So can you tell my listeners a little bit about how this program that you created came to be? Like, it's just such an amazing story that you have.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you know, there's really like two roads that have led me here and kind of merging together. And, you know, I'll just explain kind of each one because it's my life, right? So it's a whole life story that's kind of come together. But, you know, the first branch of the story is that I failed first grade, and I failed first grade because my reading was really behind. And, you know, by the time I was in third grade, you know, they were like, okay, well, you know, you're struggling at reading. So typical of the time, let's give you more of what you're struggling with. So because at that point in my life, I was already taking my schoolwork home, even though in third grade, when I was in school, there wasn't homework. I had homework because I couldn't finish it in school. And so the teacher's idea was, well, let's give you more work to do. And I wish I still had it, but I had this green, like tackle box looking thing full of these mini books. And every day I had to read the book and answer the questions to show comprehension for what I was reading. But it wasn't that I lacked literacy or the ability to read. I didn't discover until much later in my life that it was actually tied to how strong and coordinated my eyes were. And discovering that was just by chance. And I up until age 33, I created some hacks for myself to overcome this difficulty with reading, because what would happen for me is that when I would try to read, I would get one or two sentences in and I would just fall asleep. My brain would just shut down. And I didn't know why. I didn't talk about it. I had a lot of shame with it because it was like everybody around me can read and they love to read. And my friends and my wife can read a book in 4 hours and I'm falling asleep and I can't get through one chapter in 4 hours, you know? So in college, I would just get up early before classes and read, sometimes standing up so that I wouldn't fall asleep, and find ways around it as an adult after college doing audiobooks. So I would say that I read a book, but it was really a book that I had listened to. And that's where it really, like, it was beautiful. And also that's where it really kind of like came to a head when I was talking to a client of mine about a book I was reading. That's a great series, and I got to get the next book in this series, and so I can read it on my trip to California that's coming up. And of course, I was talking about listening to the audiobook, not reading the book. And so the next time she came in, she brought me a copy of the next book in the series, and I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, great. Now I have to listen to it, tell her I loved it, give her the book back. I had this whole story that I had to come up with because of the shame around not being, quote, being able to read. And so I took the book with me, didn't read it, of course. And while I was in California, I was at a conference and I just happened to run into a vision therapist who was doing eye assessments. And
how amazing.
I know. It was like, but also like, it was so bizarre because I had no understanding or awareness that was even a gap or deficiency that I had. or that would be something that we'd be looking for, you know? And as we're talking to like the benefits of having strong eyes later on in our conversation, which I'm sure will come up, it wasn't even on my mind. And so, you know, we did the exercises, noticed that things felt crisper and, you know, I felt a little better in my body, a little more comfortable. I had a little less stiffness, which was interesting, but I went back to my booth and a friend had stopped by that I'd missed. And they wrote me a note and I picked it up and I read like fire, like I've never read before in my life. And I was like, wow, I just read that really fast. I've never read that fast. I've never felt that easy. Reading has always been very hard. And that was a significant boost to me investigating really what's possible with the eyes. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the branches, right? But it's a significant one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this person that you met, this chance encounter, which is not a chance encounter at all, but
right.
They assessed you and they must have done something.
Yeah, they did some eye range of motion exercises, you know, side to side and circles, depth perception, very simple, just a few minutes. You know, I was not in the booth for more than 5 minutes.
Wow.
And it just totally made sense for me. It just brought it together. And of course, you know, I, being the kind of problem solver that I am, I immediately started playing with different ways to do this, like just on my own in my hotel room and trying to figure out how to make this applicable to the people that I'm helping with. Cause I'm already helping clients at this point overcome their movement limitations and restrictions from neurological conditions, head injuries, you name it. So I was like, how can I help my clients with this? You know? And so I just went to work at playing with different possibilities and doing some research with it.
That's so fascinating. That's so fascinating. So is this, whatever challenge your eyes had, does it have a name or is it just a thing?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. They lacked convergence. So insufficient convergence. And the way I like to describe it, it's like, if you think of like big searchlights in the sky, you know, they cross each other. It's having each of the spotlights overlap perfectly. So each eye is seeing the same thing at the same time. And because my eyes didn't converge, they didn't see the same thing at the same time. Each eye had its own image. Mm-hmm. And so without getting too technical, basically what that means is one of two things is usually going to happen. You're either going to have double vision, where you see just two of everything you look at, or in certain angles, you see two of whatever you're looking at, or your brain will suppress one of the images. You'll see one thing, but the activity of suppressing the image is what put me to sleep.
It's exhausting. I imagine.
Exhausting. Yeah. Your brain's always suppressing that second image. And so when my eyes could work together, it wasn't exhausting and I could read because I wasn't illiterate. My eyes literally did not see the same thing.
They were fatigued.
They were tired. Yeah. My brain was like, nope, I can't do this all day. I can't do it anymore. And you'll sleep.
Isn't it fascinating just for a second? Isn't it fascinating how incredibly adaptive our brains are? It just boggles my mind.
Yeah. And you know, it does mine too. I, as much as there's a lot more information today than there was at that point in my career and life, we're just getting started, which is super exciting. And to be a part of, you know, that development, I think for anybody who's doing brain work at all is really exciting. I think we're all doing the research that's going to pay off big time. But at the time, the brain being plastic was not talked about, was not written about. Now, there you can go back in like old research and find the evidence, but it wasn't mainstream. You couldn't buy a book and talk about it. And I remember when books started coming out and it was like talking about the brain being plastic and that you could change, it could change. And I get the book and I'm reading it and I'm like, here I thought I was going to be really like educated on something. But it was more like, this is exactly what I'm doing. I don't have the terminology. So I was getting educated on the terminology and the vocab, but this is what I do. I literally am helping my clients retrain their brain and repattern and build new pathways so they can have, you know, whatever the gap filled in for their life. And it just was like, oh yeah, like that's what I do. And now I have a name for it. Now I have a way to tell you about it. Cause I couldn't tell you about it. I, you know, and at the time, I mean, I was teaching Pilates And that's what I could tell you about, mm-hmm. but that's not really what I do. So right. it's a way that I could package it up so you could understand it, so you know that I could help you. But really what I'm doing is talking about helping with brain plasticity and repatterning how your whole being is functioning based on how your brain works.
Fascinating, truly. So a couple of questions come to my mind yeah. with this vision convergence thing. Hmm. Number one, is this something that can be corrected with lenses or like glasses, or is it more about exercises?
Yeah, so there's lots of techniques. I mean, vision therapists do have just a huge amount of tools in their arsenal with various kinds of lenses and prisms and different kinds of lights they work with that you go into a clinic. Wow. And it's amazing that we have them. And usually the people that end up in the clinics have really severe situations, and they're marked. You might even see their eyes look dramatically different because of, mm-hmm. of the gap they're experiencing, but it's not very mainstream. I mean, most people that I meet have never been to a vision therapist. They haven't mm-hmm. had a need because there's nothing quote wrong with their eyes.
Right.
So the way I like to talk about it is like, we're used to at this point in our culture thinking about strength, range of motion, coordination mm-hmm. in our joints, in our body, in our parts of our body that we can see, that we can look at in the mirror, that we mm-hmm. can see on someone else. But what's really fascinating about the eyes is that, yes, it's a part of our body, but it's a sense that our brain prioritizes. The brain says, whatever the eyes are doing, we make number one over all other senses. But we can't look at our own eyes in the mirror. We can't see our range of motion. We can't see our convergence. Mm-hmm. We can't assess it by looking at it because we can't watch what is being used.
Right.
And so for me, I think that's why it comes off the radar. We can look at our legs and we can say, oh, that range of motion is smaller than that one, or they don't work mm-hmm. the same. They look different. They don't coordinate this. I can't get this to do what that one does. We can go through that in our bodies and we can recognize it. I mean, with the Olympics that were just going, you can recognize it in the Olympians. Like just how incredible they are at their coordination and timing and mm-hmm. their brain performance. But we don't think of it. It's like an invisible thing. And so what I really have spent a lot of time doing and will continue to do is to share with people how easy it is, but making it fun and accessible. That's really, really important because, you know, the clients that I see that are experiencing these gaps, they've been to vision therapists, really skilled, amazing people doing really great work. But when they go home, they don't do their homework. They take their tear off sheet and they don't do their exercises because they're not fun. They're not engaging. They don't see the payoff. Mm-hmm. And there isn't someone or a technique to help them know, is it hard enough or is it too hard? So many times I get people that have these exercises, and even when they're doing them, they're doing exercises that are too hard for where they're at. So they're not getting the benefit of the exercise because it's too hard, and then they get discouraged and they stop doing it. Mm-hmm. So the fun factor and the creative factor goes away, which is what our brains love. They want that. They crave that fun and creative piece.
So do you, I guess we'll segue to the next part of this. Do you just use vision type things in your work with people? That's my first question.
Yeah, that's a great question. In fact, I think if you don't mind, I'll use that as a jumping off point for the second branch of the story.
Oh yes, yes, yes.
Because, you know, what happened is, you know, I went to college to become a professional dancer. So I got a scholarship at a great dance program here in Michigan. And while I was there, I was really, really a high-end athlete in the sense that I am dancing 6 and 7 hours a day. I'm working out. I'm doing cardio, doing Pilates, lifting weights. It's every day. Very rarely was there a day that I hadn't some kind of physical activity for most of the day. And then I got injured in the sense that when I woke up one morning, I could barely walk to the shower. I had such pain and inflammation from my knees down that I would just shuffle and just could barely take a step without pain. And, you know, this was like, well, I'm here on scholarship and this is my ticket out of my small little town of 300 to make a life for myself. This is what this has to work, but I don't feel like I can walk. So we have a problem here.
Yeah.
And so I was home on holiday break and I was just kind of complaining to my mom about, you know, I don't get what's going on. I have, just from the knees down, so much pain and so much inflammation. And I just don't get it. And she said, well, Trent, that's because you were born with cerebral palsy. And I was just like, wait, when I was 19 at the time, it's like, wow. Like, as I think about the restriction that I had that I thought was normal, it was really because I was born with a brain injury. And for people that don't have any experience with cerebral palsy, you know, that's essentially what it is. It's, you're born with a head injury, and then you have this brain injury that you're healing from while you're trying to learn how to exist in your life. And so you adapt because you can't use parts of your brain that are injured. So you use other parts, and you wire, because we know the brain's plastic, you wire your abilities with other parts of your brain. And there's a range of gaps and dysfunctions that can happen from having cerebral palsy. So most people would know, at a class 3 or higher, they have some kind of walking device, or maybe they're wheelchair bound and they need support constantly, because there's a range. Most people don't know that at a class 1, you would not know by looking at someone that was the situation. And that was me. And, you know, I couldn't like bend over and touch my knees, let alone touch my toes. And I was just had such limitation. And my mom was like, yeah, don't you remember when you were 3? And I'm like, well, I don't remember much of my childhood. That's not like my brain. But she's like, when the doctor put casts on your legs. And I was like, oh, I do remember having these casts on my legs. And she said, yeah, the doctor cast you to force your heels down because you had zero range of motion in your ankles. So they forced your Achilles tendon to stretch to put your heels down. So you think of like a toe walker, but this is a situation where I actually could not physically get my heels down. So there was no surgery, which is great, because a lot of times they perforate tendons and they create more problems from the surgery than what you want. And I was like, yeah, I do remember that. Cause in fact, you know, my older brother would torture me by putting garbage bags on my legs and then throwing me in a snowbank, because it was funny to him to watch the little brother, you know.
Oh boy.
But, you know, it was fine. It was just sort of like a 5-year older brother kind of a situation.
Yeah.
But I remember struggling with stairs with the cast on. I'm like, yeah, I do remember that. And that was, you know, that was before I had realized that my eyes had issues. So this is like really early on. And that really lit a fire in problem solving for myself. So before I saw any clients or helped anybody else, I was able to rehab my own injury by trial and error, going, okay, I can't do therapy. I don't have money for a therapist. I can't go to get massage or PT or whatever might be at my fingertips. So I just trial and error exercises. And sometimes I made it worse. Sometimes I made it better. And it was the things that made it better. I would measure how long it lasted and just lean into that. And then looking back, what I was doing was building plasticity around, you know, exercises that were ideal for my body. I just was repeating them over and over and over again, throwing things away that weren't working, keeping what did. And that created the pattern to rehab my own injury without any interventions from someone else. So those two worlds, you know, intersecting, where we know the brain is plastic, we know that the eyes have a significant input into overall performance in your whole life and your whole body, plus the idea that I'm just like this extreme problem solver where I'm going to try to find a way to solve the situation. You know, that's really what got me here today in my career, 25 years later.
So your trial and error experimentation to try to solve these problems for yourself, did that happen while you were in college after this conversation with your mom?
Yeah, it was like the next day. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go to work.
I love it.
Yeah. I mean, the most solution that I was given by one of my professors was just put some Icy Hot on it and wrap it in like Saran wrap, and you're good to go. It was like, yeah, that's not a solution, but thanks for your advice. No. I'm going to not do that, but I am going to dive into trying to figure out how I can solve this.
So how long did it take you to figure this stuff out and solve
it? Yeah, under a month. I mean, it was just a few weeks, and I was, as I was experimenting, I was getting well enough that I could keep performing. It was still a lot of pain, but I could function. But it was, you know, it wasn't a long time. It was because I was intensely doing it every day, every morning, before class, after class, in the evening, at home, again the next day, just relentlessly trying to find a solution. because like I said, this is my ticket out. This is my ticket to something better in my life. So it was essential that I figure it out.
That is so fascinating.
Oh, it's pretty wild.
Gracious. So you're in college, you figured out how to eliminate or drastically reduce your pain.
Yeah.
So that you could use your scholarship, continue dancing, doing this high level movement hours and hours a day.
Yeah.
And then what? Like how, well, I guess my first question is how long, once you kind of figured it out over that month, what would help you to reduce or eliminate your pain? Then how long did you, like, how long was the daily practice that you had to do to keep the pain at bay?
So once I actually solved it, I didn't have to keep doing it. It didn't come back and then I have to do it to make it go away.
Oh.
It was because it was brain plasticity. It was literally, I improved my patterning so that I had better patterns so that I wouldn't get injured again. And that's what I think, that's the jump for people that really, I'm so glad you asked the question, because that's the thing we're used to is like, okay, well, this hurts. So do this every day. And then every day you'll get rid of your pain. But when, now that we know that the brain is plastic, if you find and you can unlock really what the gap is and you reinforce that pattern, now you have a new pattern, a new pathway, a new driveway to drive on that isn't have a problem. And that's what I was able to discover. It was like, okay, I have this really big gap. And if I fill in this gap and reinforce it, you know, one line, then another line, then a bigger fat marker, then, and then you reinforce it so that pathway is really bold, then that can become the pathway you use. And just in our brain, that's essentially how it works. We often think about this like idea of like, okay, stop doing that and do this instead. And that's not how it works. Whatever pattern is stronger is the one that is the easiest one for the brain. Mm-hmm. And it's the one that it will take. Mm-hmm. So you have to create a pattern that is stronger than the one that isn't functioning for you. Mm-hmm. And so the way I like to express it, it's like, if I had a piece of paper and I put like one color of highlighter down of this old pattern that was reinforced for many, many 19 years. And then I took a Sharpie, a black Sharpie, to make a new pattern. And at first, it doesn't cover the color. It just makes one little line through it. But as I'm building a new pattern and reinforcing it, it becomes the dominant pattern. But what can happen is if you get tired, you don't have nutrition, you don't have hydration, you can fall back to that old pattern because it's stronger and it takes over. But what does happen is that if you build a pattern strong enough for a new brain, it'll just naturally lower this other pattern. And if it's strong enough, you won't rely on the other pattern. And mm-hmm. that's what's beautiful about the brain being plastic. You're changing, but it's not this pattern, like one pattern that you're transforming into something else. It's literally building a new pattern that becomes mm-hmm. stronger and a bigger highway over that little trail that you had built.
Right. That makes sense. So now I'm wondering, does that mean that the root of your pain that you experience was more from, unhelpful or inappropriate movement patterns rather than something physical that was causing the pain that had nothing to do with movement?
Exactly. It is, I was a master of compensation. So let's say your ankle is supposed to work like X and mine work like purple W. It's like not even in the same category. Right. Mm-hmm. So because I've mastered compensation, I found a way to perform. I would just compensate. I would mm-hmm. just make it look the way it was supposed to look, even though I wasn't using my body properly.
But with inappropriate movements.
Totally.
Patterns. Okay.
Totally. Yeah. So building new patterns meant building appropriate movement patterns that were efficient and they were balanced and they were how the joints were designed to work, how the brain was designed to function in harmony with all of that.
Fascinating. So what kinds of, this might be a leap and maybe we have to wait to answer this question, but what kinds of things can you help people with?
Yeah. I've got 25 years of experience helping with a pretty dynamic range or broad range of people. The ones that come to mind right away, if we're looking at kids, for example, kids that struggle with homework is a big one. because the struggles of homework, well, you can identify like a thing, like homework is an issue. What comes off of that is going to be regulation. It's going to be attention and focus and confidence. So those are big ones for kids. And so that's where, you know, I build out games with the Brain Speed Ball that I created to help kids find a way to establish better focus, have some confidence on their own so they can feel better and actually accomplish the task, which could be homework for them. Quite often it's homework. Because there's such a struggle with that, especially with how much virtual learning is going on right now. Oof. It's just, and they're in front of a screen all day. And so, mm-hmm. you know, you think about, you know, sitting in a chair with your eyes not really moving much, just staring at a mm-hmm. screen, you know, movement's incredibly important. And with your eyes, it's just as important, if not more so, because mm-hmm. the brain is prioritizing the information from the eyes. So when I build a game with eye movement, then it's something that just, it gives, with less than 5 minutes, gives you a shot in the arm to really have your brain serve you and be efficient and function the way it's designed to help you. And so that's a fun, it's fun to see, and it's fun to see how fast it can be. I mean, one story that comes to mind is there was a mom in Chicago who'd actually been given the Brain Speed Ball by her friend. She brought it home, left it on the counter, and her 13-year-old daughter found it. And she started making up her own games and throwing it against the wall and playing various games. And then the mom discovered this and kind of leaned into it a little bit and kind of helped her learn how to use it and optimize how she used it. And I got a call one day from this mom saying, you know, you don't know me, but you've totally changed the dynamics in my household. My family is a new family because of this, because for the first time in my daughter's life, she can sit and do homework. And it was wow. just like amazing, because it's just a simple game. But because we're not looking at the eyes in a profound way, we're not considering just how profound we're looking and considering and exercising the eyes can be. By just wow. doing that a little has tremendous effect on your ability. And I'm not the first person to put letters and numbers on a ball. I mean, this is it, right? So it's A through Z and 1 through 12. That's not the brilliant part. The part that works is that when we play this game, we're bringing in your visual senses and your inner ear. So we're talking about vision and balance that directly results in better action. So we know, research has shown us that better perception through our senses equals better action. Mm-hmm. And when if you take the word action, you could branch that off into focus and confidence and attention and regulation for kids mm-hmm. we're talking about right now. Mm-hmm. But if you don't mind, I kind of love to tell you kind of how we play, because I think it would help kind of enlighten how that brings it to light.
Yeah, I would love to hear and see. I mean, those of you who are listening on the podcast, you can certainly check out the video on YouTube if you want to actually see what Trent is going to show us.
Yeah. So if you and I were playing a game of catch here, Aaron, I'd throw the ball to you and you would catch it. You throw it back and we'd just be playing a game of catch first to make sure that we can both catch the ball. Because mm-hmm. some people actually can't catch a ball. So mm-hmm. we might change the game by rolling the ball mm-hmm. or handing the ball. It doesn't have to be a throwing, but mm-hmm. we start that way. And if we can throw the ball back and forth, that's what we do. Mm-hmm. And so then if we're playing the game as you caught the ball, I would then ask you, tell me what you see when you catch the ball. So you'd catch the ball and you'd say out loud, F, and you throw it back to me. Then I throw it back to you and you do the same thing. You'd say one, and we go back and forth. And so what's happening right now is that you have the ball coming from far to near. Mm-hmm. So your eyes have depth perception training
yep.
built into the game. We don't have to talk about depth perception. We don't have to talk about your eyes. We don't have to make it sciencey. Just catch the ball. And that's built in. Right.
Wow.
Then as you're able to do that, I'm going to throw the ball to your left and to your right and then up and then to your right and then down and to your left and then over. And then by doing that, your eyes are going in different ranges of motion. And we can challenge how well your eyes can converge and how well they can track. We can do slow tracking. We can do quick movements of your eyes, challenging the different ways our eyes are designed to move. And so, you know, that touches on a huge part of what can really get the brain engaged. But there's a ninja move here that happens without ever having to talk about it that I'll reveal. So when you catch the ball and you say out loud 10, for example, what's happening is that you are sensing what's going on in this way we're seeing it, right? Mm-hmm. You're deciding what to do and then you're acting on it. So you see the ball, you decide, I'm going to catch it, and I'm going to say the number 10, and then you say the number 10 out loud. Mm-hmm. So that sense, decide, act is a cycle that our brain already uses to take in information. What do I do with this information? And then act on it. Mm-hmm. And so by wrapping it into a game that also includes eye range of motion, depth perception, we have this 1-2 punch that gets the brain to be more efficient, to work faster, not to make you hyper, but actually to relax you because it's more efficient and it can solve problems faster. Right. It's important to make that distinction. It's fire up your brain, but not fire up, make you hyper. It actually is to get your brain to process faster, which can help you relax and gives you more room and helps you regulate. That's a huge part of it. But we're talking about your eyes and your ear. So you're moving your head, you're moving your body. And the person that you're playing the game with, you don't have to explain any of it to them. Just play the game. Just teach them how to track it and see it come into their hands, say what they see. It's as simple as that. And there are thousands of games you can play. And I've built programs for specific populations of people because certain games lend themselves to certain populations. So there's games for kids that are really ideal for their situation. We have games for seniors, because when we're talking about balance and memory and cognition, we wrap that in. For athletes, we're talking about performance and filling in gaps like mine, you know, as a high-end athlete with a significant gap. So, but for kids, you know, so often you have a situation where the kid, they might have a diagnosis. If they don't have a diagnosis, they probably have some kind of label or stigma or shame or just sense of disappointment from their parents or frustration from the parents because they're not good enough or they're not enough. And the parents don't feel like they're enough. And so what I love is that this is a game that you can play where you don't have to have a label. And in fact, I'd rather not talk about whatever label you have in playing the game. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite people I've ever worked with, she was a young teenager and she's on the autism spectrum. And her mom's like, I'd like to bring her to you to work with her. And I was at a conference. And so she brought her to the booth. And I know the mom ahead of time. So I kind of knew who she was bringing. And I said beforehand to the mom, I said, yeah, I really don't want to make this about any condition or label. Like, what does she love to do? What is something that she actually loves? And she loves dance. And I'm like, well, that's awesome because I have to have some experience in that area. And so she came and I said, so, you know, I hear that you love to dance. She's like, oh, I love to dance, but my teacher gives me a hard time about some things. I said, okay, well, tell me what your teacher gives you a hard time on. And she's like, well, when I'm doing my jumps, my head is down and my jumps aren't high enough. I'm like, okay, so I want to see if we can make your jumps higher and get your head to lift up without telling you to do so. So let's just have you do your jumps the way you do them. I'm not going to tell you, I'm not going to give you any instruction. Just here at the ballroom, just do your ballet class for me. And so she did. And then we played the game, just like I described it to you, tracking the ball, saying what she saw out loud, challenging the different ranges of motion, the depth perception for less than 5 minutes. And I said, okay, try them again. And she tried them again. And she's like, wow, what just happened? Like, that was higher. And I know I was looking up because I saw the top of the room. I was like, yeah. And the mom saw it. I saw it, but she felt it, which is the most important thing because, you know, you could see changes in people, but for them to feel like they are embodying the change and noticing it is huge. And so we just kept leaning into improving her dance. All the while knowing research has proven that better perception is better action. So I know later on in her life, it's going to show up someplace related to her condition. We just don't know where yet. We don't know how it's going to show up. And so it was great. It was a great moment. She went on with her conference and her mom was attending the conference. And so after the conference was over and I got home, I got this really great note from her mom saying, you know, what you don't know is that the day before I brought her to you, the conference was in Vegas, by the way. The day before I brought her to you, we were out on the strip. She wanted to see the strip, see all the lights. And we were crossing the road and she just so overwhelmed, sensory overload from everything going on, just fell to a heap. And I had to like pick her up and carry her out of the road.
Wow.
And so then that night after she saw you was the big party for the conference. And it's, you know, like a 3-hour party. Loud music,
stimulation,
lots of lights, costumes, all that stimulation. And she said, normally when I bring her to these things, she lasts about a half an hour and that's great. We go back to the room, we relax, it's no problem. And she said, Trent, she stayed all 3 hours. And when we got back to the room, she was fine.
Wow. And
yeah, that's what I still gives me goosebumps, because that's, we don't have to talk about the thing that's making you frustrated as a parent to help your kids with the thing that's making you frustrated. And that can be a relief to a lot of parents, because I know from my own situation mm-hmm. with my kids, it's like, it can be really painful to have your kids struggle with something that you just, you've used every resource that you can get your hands on, and you spent all kinds of money trying to find a solution, and it's just not quite where you want it to be. And to me, there's something really special about being able to help you improve something that you love, that you care about, that also, by the way, immediately is connected to the thing that you're struggling with, so that you're, you mm-hmm. don't feel like you're in therapy. You know, you're not, oh, this is another therapist and they never work, or they work a little, but not for very long. You know, whatever narrative, you know, they're going to have, you or the parent or the kid's going to have about the situation, of being able to trust it. So yeah, I love that story. It's, she's amazing. She inspires me so much. It's fantastic.
That's really, really, really an inspiring story. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, sure.
So when people work with you, I mean, I guess we can focus here on the kids since this is a parenting podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
When families reach out to you and want to work with you, how long do they normally work with you? Or is it this just the program? Do they work with you directly? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. So, you know, there is an online program that they can use, and it's step-by-step, teaches them how to use the ball, how to play the games, how to start off and kind of ramp up to more challenging games. But ultimately what the goal here is to get parents and kids to be self-sufficient and not need me. You know, it's mm-hmm. like, I do have clients that I see one-on-one, and they're usually the most extreme situations or the most severe. They've got the most at stake. They just have been everywhere. They're exhausted. They've spent tens, 20, $30,000 on something that they just haven't found a solution to. And so I do work with them, but more often than not, I'm getting them into an online program that's really affordable. And then I provide support, and I provide support through what I call Ask Trent. And it's just a free program that even if you don't have the ball or the kids program yet, you can actually get involved with. And what I do is I collect questions that you might have about your situation, and then I answer them live, and then I provide the video afterwards too. So you're not alone. You're like, you know, sometimes you get an online program and it's like, okay, well, there it is. And I went through it, but I have questions and I don't really understand how it connects. And so Ask Trent is a way to help it bring it to life for you and to contextualize mm-hmm. what you might need help with, that other people probably need help with as well, that they just don't maybe know how to ask.
That sounds like a great program and a great service that you have created for people.
I'm finding what's really amazing is that, you know, early in my career, I thought people needed more of my attention. They needed more like help from me. Mm-hmm. And that I've discovered, you know, it's really like, how soon can I get you to be self-sufficient? How quickly can you not need me? I'm always here. Like, you have support, you're not alone, but being able to have a kid grab the ball on their own and play the game, or have parents play with their kids, or have the kids play with their siblings, you know, it's fantastic that way.
That's really amazing. I really love it. I really, really do. So where can people find out more about your program and connect with you and learn more?
Yeah. So I'd invite them to go to fireupyourbrain.com, and then there's a program there. You can read all about the kids program, and the kids program comes with a ball. So you have all the tools you need. And then I would really encourage you to sign up for Ask Trent, which is on the website as well. And then that's something that you can connect to me and the community, and, you know, get to know other people that are like you, that have questions or maybe have situations similar to yours, that you know that you're not alone.
This is fabulous. I am so interested and fascinated by different kinds of approaches to solving problems. You know, there's the standard way to solve many problems, and then there's different ways, creative ways. And sometimes the creative ways solve things that the standard ways don't. And it sounds like that might be the category that your program fits into.
I think so. And also I want people to know that this is really simple. Like,
yeah, it sounds so simple.
And that can make people feel skeptical. Like, really? Is that really what happened? I'm like, listen, I'm surprised every time something happens to you. I'm here doing the research with you. I'm here trying to discover what is possible. And that's what's exciting to me. I'm not here to tell you that I have all the answers. Nobody has all the answers. But I know if we can keep it fun and creative, and you can consider how important the eyes are, mm-hmm. and how important that affects all of the actions that we do, it can be a paradigm shift for parents. It's like, oh, okay, if I eat because I need nutrition, and I drink water because I need hydration, and I do exercise and movement because I need to be physically fit and mentally fit, but I'm leaving out the most important sense in my movement, oh, there's an opportunity there. Now, that, I think that requires a little bit of a paradigm shift, and that can be hard for people at times, you know, when they're used to, you know, what they're used to. So I just invite people to kind of open their mind and go, okay, you can do a ton of research on your own. You can go, oh, how important are the eyes to the brain? You can Google that, go do that. And you'll see that there's a lot of research that's shown that there's actually speculation that they're actually different, like that the eyes may actually be part of the brain, that they're not connected to the brain, but they are the brain. And that's incredibly exciting to me, because with the kind of quick results that I see on a regular basis with me and people on their own, I believe that. It's just, it's pretty unheard of. It's pretty remarkable. So I think that's the most exciting part.
That is really exciting. Well, I am excited for people to hear our conversation today. I'm sure when people listen to it, they're going to have all kinds of ideas and thoughts, and they're going to be really curious. So I encourage everyone to check out your program and find out more about what it is that you offer and how they can get involved in it and how it might be able to help their children or maybe even them, depending on what they struggle with. So who knows?
For sure. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you, Trent, for spending this time with me today and sharing your really, really fascinating program. I'm really interested in it, and I think it sounds really, really cool. And so I hope everyone will go and check you out and connect with you and find out more about it and fire up their own brains.
Right. Thank you.
So that wraps up today's episode. I hope you have enjoyed our conversation, and wherever you are in this world, I hope that your brain is very fired up. That wraps up this episode of Powerful Parenting for Today's Kids. If you know anyone who could benefit from this episode or this podcast in general, please share it with them. Also, I always love hearing feedback from my listeners. I welcome you to send me an email to aaron@aaron-taylor.com if you have any comments or questions that come up for you in an episode. Our children are our future. Parenting them is the most sacred task we will ever be asked to do. It truly does take a village to raise a child. Let's help each other to raise our children to be who it is they are meant to be. If at any point you feel like you need a little extra help and support, reach out to me. I am here to help you.